Welcome back to Mental Health Integration. This is week 11, part one, the church's response. I am glad to be back with you. In the last section, we talked a lot about what you can do as a caregiver to take care of somebody. And in the previous sections, all the way up until this point, we've been talking about what you can do as an individual. Because most of this has been about who is this person? What are they going through? How do I deal with that? How do I get better? How do I do self-care? Now, how do I take care of the people I love? And now we're starting to ask the question, what can the church do as a whole? And what the church can do as a whole is largely going to be informed by all of those questions. But then there's some extra steps we have to take because now we're applying this to a body of believers. So, what do you do to support someone you love? And what can the church do? Now, before we talk too much about all of these steps and all of these things that you can develop, know that there are stages that you're going to have to walk through and stages that you're going to have to open up in order to really effectively work with mental health issues and your church. Now, I'm not saying you are going to be some sort of hospital for the mentally, you know, handicapped. That's not going to happen. But as we talked about in week two, mental health affects, you know, mental illness affects about 1 in 5 people in any given year. And it affects more than 50% of people during their lifetime. If you think your church is immune to mental health issues and they're not at your church, it most likely means that people are hiding because they're scared of what happens if their mental illness comes out. It most likely means there's stigma around mental health, whether that's coming from the leadership or whether that's coming from the culture in the church at large or whether that's coming from the individuals with mental health issues actually just forcing that on themselves. In the average congregation, if the average congregation is 75 people, you can expect there's at least some mental health issues going on. I remember doing a workshop for a church. It was a very small church. They were on the verge of closing. And in this church, they said, there might be 1 or 2 people who have mental health issues. We did a mental health Sunday and then a mental health workshop. Those 1 or 2 people turned out to be 3/4 of the church who were silent about their mental health issues because they didn't want to be stigmatized. It was the vast majority. Like, these 1 or 2 people turned out to be almost the whole church. So when you're walking through this, just know these people are already in your pews. If you are going to deal with mental illness effectively, this does not mean that you are going to turn your church into the hospital for everyone in your area who needs a mental health support system. It means that the people already in your care need support, and they're going to get it from you finally. So, that said, what can your church do? Beginning with the people in your own congregation who are already there. You don't need to go anywhere to find these people. What can your church do to support mental health? Well, it starts with developing a theology of mental health. And the reason you have to do this is because before you get to building programs or doing mental health Sundays or anything like that, you need to be able to make sure that you, the leadership of the church, is in unity about what mental health issues are and how they function. You need to be in unity about what God says about mental health issues. And you need to be in unity in what kind of a place this is going to be. That culture establishment and those discussions, those will dictate how we're going to, you know, work with the rest of this stuff. Everything's going to roll downhill from this point. But we need to have the discussion about what kind of a community this is going to be. What does God believe about mental health issues? What do we need to believe about mental health issues? How does this fit together? And if we start with that, we will be in great shape to build a beautiful mental health space because we've already done the hard work. And yes, in many cases, this is the hard work to make that happen so that support can happen. And support is hard work too. But if we're doing support and trying to fight all these battles simultaneously, it's just too much. So with this, we're going to ask some interesting questions like, is mental illness because the person is a sinner? Are they a sinner? Yes, they sin. But do I have bipolar disorder because I am a sinner? No. It's because I have a biological disposition in my genetics towards bipolar disorder, and it informs my neurochemistry. My neurochemistry does not work right, and that causes bipolar disorder. So is this because I'm a sinner? No. Does my sin contribute to me having bipolar disorder? Well, if I'm doing things that don't help me, that are sinful, that probably contributes to it not getting better. I mean, if I'm dealing with addiction and things like that, that's not going to help. That's going to hurt a lot. I really need to deal with that. If I'm dealing with other issues of sin, could that make it worse too? Yeah. But that doesn't change my biochemistry. It's that you compound bad things with bad things and extra bad things happen. So let's just be realistic about this. These are not issues that are like taboo or anything like that. These are just issues that if you want to get better, you have to walk through them. We have to deal with our stuff if we want our stuff to get better. Okay? It doesn't get better on its own. What if the person has unconfessed sin? Is that why they have mental illness? In my experience, probably not. Could it happen? Sure. But is that normally the cause of a mental health issue, especially one like bipolar disorder or schizophrenia or severe anxiety, these big ones that have like neurochemistry basis? If someone in your church has autism, is that because they have unconfessed sin? Probably not. Does unconfessed sin contribute? Maybe. Listen, having unconfessed sin and having things that you are not bringing to the surface creates a feeling of anxiety because you don't want to be found out. It creates feelings of tension in you. It creates feelings where you're not feeling like yourself because you're not integrating. We talked about in Genesis 1 and 2, the man and the woman are both naked and unashamed. There is complete vulnerability between the two of them. That's the model that we're designed to live in. If you have unconfessed sin, we have already put on the fig leaves. We are already running away. Is that the way we're meant to live? No. So is that going to contribute to our mental health issue? Probably. It's not going to make it better. Hiding and running away instead of being our authentic self? Absolutely, that's not going to help. But is it the cause of something like autism or bipolar disorder or any of these other diseases? No. It's just a contributing factor in not helping. What if they do not believe? Well, we talked about this a lot. If they don't believe and we heap shame on them, that doesn't help them at all. If they don't believe and we need to talk to them about belief, then we need to do so in a loving way. Our job is to draw them closer to God through love, not to judge them. We don't need to shame somebody who's already struggling. Or is it because of the sins of the family? Listen, generational sin is like a real thing in some ways, right? Trauma goes down families. Agreements about what your power is and how you affect that power, it runs down families. Mental health issues, a lot of them are genetic. But does that mean it's because of the sins of our ancestors? No. My ancestors had some really, really messed up genetics. To my knowledge, there's nothing that they do to cause those genetics. That is just a part of being me. That is the genetics I inherited. My son and my daughter, they've got the same genetics that I do, at least 50%. So we'll see what happens. Is that because of my sin that they might have mental illness? No, that's not it. But it is because of genetics. So, it is important to say those traumas and those issues, those do need to be dealt with. Things like personality disorders, they used to be Axis II disorders, how they were qualified a number of DSM ago. And Axis II disorders like that were caused in large part the theory was, by trauma or neglect. So is that because of a family history thing? Maybe, probably. But does telling them they need to repent for their family trauma help? No. So I want to add a piece to this paradigm, which is it helpful? Because we can really easily blame somebody for something and make it really unhelpful. And that just doesn't help anybody. It is, by definition, not helpful. Is it because of the sin of Adam? Well, all mental health issues entered the world when sin cracked in Genesis 3. So, yeah, in some ways it is. But we're not going to go change his mind about, you know, eating fruit and bringing chaos and destruction into the world. So that doesn't really help us. Yeah, sin entered the world, but we can't take it back. Is it because of their failure? Maybe. If you fail at something big and you fall into a depression because of it, because your body is no longer creating serotonin as a reward for actually succeeding in life and doing good things, yeah, that's kind of because of a failure. But is the best way to fix that to say, hey, you need to repent for your failure? No. No. In some cases, it means you need to build self-care practices in place that help you succeed at something. You need some wins. Just like we talked about in the habit section, those little wins begin to build on each other and begin to build momentum. Right? So yeah, we need... If it's their failure, great. They need to win at something. What if it's because of their biology? Then we need some medications probably to fix it? That's fine. We've talked about this a lot in this course. Some people need pills to get better. I'm among those people. That's just fine. Get the help you need. That's great. What if it's because of their trauma? Then they probably need to work through this with a therapist. Right? But blaming the person who caused the trauma actually does not help. It tries to create a scapegoat. You do need to tell the truth about the person who caused the trauma. There's no way around that. You absolutely cannot help a person heal if you will not validate their trauma. There's been evidence, especially with women who were raped, that if when they talk about their rape to the first person, if that first person believes them, the trauma coming out of that is significantly lessened compared to then if someone does not believe them or dismisses them. So if it is because of trauma, believe them. Take it seriously. But it doesn't just mean like blaming that person for everything. It means acknowledging the trauma, acknowledging exactly what happened. It means telling the truth about what happened. And then it means getting some serious therapy, because those problems, they actually in some ways like injure our brain. And we need to work through that. No way around it. Is mental illness a spiritual issue? Are there elements of spirituality? Yes. You have 10 weeks under your belt of me talking about the spiritual issues in this. You know what the spiritual issues are in large part. So, are there spiritual elements? Yeah. Do you need to deal with those? Yeah. Are they a great opportunity? Yeah. Is mental health issue demonic? This is one of those places where you need to be super, super, super careful. And the reason I say this is because I have heard more people with a genuine mental illness say their church blamed it on something demonic than you ever want to know. I have also heard cases where there were actually demonic things going on. So could it be? There's a chance, yes. Do you need to be sure that it is before you blame the person who's going through it on that? Yes. Okay. In my experience, Satan is much more likely to use a mental illness to his advantage than he is to create it from scratch. We used to talk about it as like a boxer. You get in the ring, and they're going at it, and someone gets a cut above their eye. Well, a good boxer will focus on that because it is a weakness. And Satan is one of the most crafty beings in the history of everything. If we think that he's not going to somehow focus on our weaknesses and take advantage of every ounce of weakness we have, we are fooling ourselves. So yeah, is there something demonic with mental health issues? Often it is Satan pressing his advantage. But that doesn't mean that he has created the advantage. In most cases that I've seen with mental health issues, it is him pressing an advantage, not creating an advantage. He's taking a biological weakness or a disposition towards something and then just pushing it as far as he can. Is this an agreement or stronghold? Once again, we're in spiritual discussions here, and do these things exist? Yeah. Do we need to deal with them? Yeah. Do we need to blame mental illness on them? No. We can do some serious damage if we assign blame to something that doesn't actually have that blame. If this is a mental illness that's genetic and we assign it a spiritual value, then a person doesn't get better. We are spiritually abusing them. We've talked about this a little bit. If you want to drive someone away from church as fast as you possibly can and make sure that no one they ever know goes to church too, make sure that you tell them that their problems are demonic and spiritual when they're biological, and then push them to try and get better, and when they don't get better, they'll get frustrated and leave. That's just the nature of it, being completely blunt. If you want people to experience health and healing, approach them with love and listen. You can get to the bottom of it. Then get other people involved. But listen. Do not just shoot off into the direction that you think it could be before you've really figured it out. And in most cases, you won't be able to figure out by yourself. You're going to need some extra help. So get that extra help. Is this solely a mental health issue? Usually no. This is in this weird gray space. Everything is together in this weird gray space in the middle. It's not like mental health issue over here, normal life over here. Instead, it is big gray space with all of that stuff tangled together. And in that big gray space, you have mental health issues, you have physical health issues, you have self-worth issues, you have all of it, and it all plays in this same gray space. So, is this solely a mental health issue? Usually, no. But do mental health issues contribute? Yes, and sometimes they contribute by far the vast amount of what's going on. A mental health issue could be 99% of what's going on. That is okay. But you need to talk and work through that and figure that stuff out. And know that a person's disposition, how they act, what they believe, how they interact with the world, and their mental illness, what you see is always going to be where these two meet. It is never going to be just one or the other. And so trying to untangle them in some ways is a waste of time. But being able to name them and see what's going on, that is really helpful. Being able to name, I am feeling this thing right now, right? In my own case, my own trauma, we've talked about this a little bit. We've talked about my first trauma being, Brandon, I'm so disappointed in you. Well, being able to unravel that from bipolar disorder, where they were enmeshed, and where I was constantly ruminating on not being enough, when they're enmeshed, and we can just name, okay, here is this not, Brandon, I'm so disappointed in you. And here's bipolar disorder, and they're both in this together. And we don't need to know whether this action is this part or this part. It's probably both. So normally, is this just one thing? No. This is a multitude of things. Does the church have anything to say? Yes. Please. In psychology, we talk about the bio, psycho, social, spiritual model. This is your biology, plus your psychology, plus your sociology, plus your spirituality, and these four elements make up a person. Okay? Your biology, this is the realm of a psychiatrist. They are trying to help you get your neural connections to fire right. Your psychology is often with a therapist. This is where we're starting to work through our traumas, work through what's happening in our lives. But this is also where our friends are and they meet us. Because all this work isn't going to happen in a therapist's office. Some of it's going to happen outside. Then your social circle. Who are the people that are surrounding you, that give you social support, that make your life go? Where do you play? Where do you work? Where do you act? Where do you do stuff? The church is in this conversation. The church is a big part of this conversation. And then the spiritual part, the church is this conversation for a lot of people. So here are four parts. Bio, this is the psychiatrist, but sometimes we need to help people know that this is that that's what's going on. The psycho, the psychology, right? This is a realm where the church has a little bit to say because you're going to be working back and forth around issues of faith in this place, right? We talked about all those questions of identity. Those are faith questions. They're in this box sometimes. Social problems, that's in this box too. And finally, your spiritual problems. Does the church have something to say? Yes. It has so much to say, it's not even funny. And people desperately need to hear it. And that's why this course exists. So please, please, do the work so that you have the things to say. Because people desperately need to hear them. They desperately need to be cared, and they desperately need to know that you care. Does spirituality play any part? Yeah. It plays a huge part. And as a church, we are the organization who is in that spot of Jesus is the vine, and we are the branches. And our job is to listen and be connected to Jesus so that we can then produce fruit. That fruit, in some ways, is safety for people. It's love. It's community. It's grace. It is goodness made manifest. And people desperately need that. So does spirituality play any part in this? Plays a huge part. A huge part. So let's not forget the part we have to play. Is spirituality helpful or hurtful? Well, that depends on what we're saying is spiritual, isn't it? I am not going to say that certain spiritual disciplines are good or bad. I will say, if you believe God hates you, you're not going to, your spirituality is not going to do you any favors through this process. And if you believe God loves you, your spirituality will do you favors through this process. It's one of the reasons we focused so hard on helping you understand that your value as a person starts in Genesis 1 and 2, not in Genesis 3. But Genesis 3 is about breaking something good. It's not about being made as something bad. If your spirituality can come to the plate and give you the hope that you need to move forward, it can be one of the most helpful things in the world. Because that's what you're counting on. What you need to know is that what you believe creates space for the rest of this conversation. As I said, the rest of what's going on in your church around mental health flows straight downhill from this one topic. If you need to take the time as a leadership team to go through and develop out your theology of mental health, I think that is a beautiful idea. If you need to take some time and work through your own thoughts, that's great. If you want to just steal a bunch of my thoughts, that's fine, but go double check them. Go make sure that when you look at your Bible and when you look at what healing and all of this looks like, that it jives. If you need help building out this conversation, there are experts out there. There are therapists in your area who have been wrestling with this stuff for years, who just want a church to finally take it seriously because they take it so seriously. In almost every community we work with, there's a therapist who is dying to be heard because their church has largely ignored them, and they don't want to be ignored. In many spaces that we work with, there are therapists who just want to contribute to the theology of the church because instead they're treated like an off-ramp. Get off and see this person, and then they'll help you get better, instead of as vital to the life of the church. Actually, this is what Jesus has to say in the midst of this. If you develop out your theology, you can help people in profound and beautiful ways. Just the theology that we've developed in this course, I hope, helps you embrace people, helps you experience people as valuable, helps you experience yourself as valuable, helps you understand how to connect with God differently. That theology matters because that helps us connect with the life of Jesus. If you can do that same thing in your church without even building anything, without doing the hard work of starting programs or doing anything like that, just acknowledging these things, you can create space that is so safe for people that so many people are waiting for and relying on. In the next section, we're going to be talking about resourcing the church, about making sure that you have all the things in place that you need in order to do great work. I will see you then.